everyone.
I was definitely going to say I have to follow that. I know you all must be passionate about this if you're in New Orleans and it's 6:45 and you all are still in this room talking about these issues. So I'll try and be relatively brief, and I apologize to those of you that were on site today. Some of this will be a repeat, but I think there's some interesting stuff. And I'll also say to Emily, if there's anything that you want to interject as we're going through it, feel free to talk. Holler. As Carl said, I'm Jeff Schwartz. I am the executive director of a tiny organization called Broad Community Connections. Executive director is a very highfalutin title for what is effectively a one-person organization with a really wonderful board. I always joke that I'm also the accountant and the janitor and everything else, but that's how I guess things get done, or at least get started. A little bit of background on Broad Community Connections. We are a community development organization. My background is in urban planning, and so we come at sort of the food access and community health issues from a little bit of a different angle than just from a growing angle or from healthcare provision or how a lot of folks might be tackling this. We really saw this as a part of our revitalization mission. And we didn't come to it initially. It was sort of something that we had some inkling of what we were doing, but we really did back into it a lot. So the Refresh Project is nothing if not a story of brain damage and perseverance, I think. But our mission really is around place-based development, using a mission around community asset building and identifying needs and gaps in communities and really thinking creatively about how to address those issues. And really first and foremost among those is fresh food access in New Orleans. Just to give you a sense, I probably should have put the Sheridan on this map, but the French Quarter, where it says Iberville CNI, that blank area there right next to the Mississippi River, that's the French Quarter. That bold line is Canal Street, and then we're sort of sitting in that semi-triangular area there. So we're only about, maybe 3/4 to a mile away from the Refresh Project. But this just sort of gives you, a sense of where we are. The neighborhoods, that Broad Street, which is that orange line, runs through, are some of the most culturally resonant and significant communities in New Orleans. They did flood during Katrina, but they are not like the Lower Ninth Ward in that respect. The buildings didn't get knocked off foundations and the like. But they were communities that had suffered from disinvestment and marginalization for 3 or 4 generations. And so our organization was really looking at how do we address really immediate needs around food access and community development, but also really address long-term issues. So not just recovery, but real genuine revitalization. Just a couple of the projects that are going on in the immediate vicinity around us. There's a really large LSU Veterans Administration hospital complex being built, and then the Lafitte Greenway, which is a new sort of rails to trails linear urban park, is about a half block from the Refresh Project, and Tulane opened up a community health center about 2 blocks away from us. There's also been 2 large redevelopments of public housing projects, both of which are one-to-one replacements of public housing units, but using more of a mixed income strategy. And so units that weren't replaced on site were actually built in a scattered site manner in communities to sort of help stitch together communities. So they're very sort of forward thinking redevelopments. New Orleans, as you guys probably know, and Louisiana in general, has some of the worst health outcomes in the entire country. I think Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama probably thank each other so that they're not last in every single list. It's sort of a you name it, we got it kind of a situation. Whether it's just overall health outcomes, poor health outcomes, or health disparities. So you guys can read the list, but from obesity to diabetes to high blood pressure, hypertension, really any chronic and diet-related disease. There's tremendous sort of disparities between African Americans and the white community in New Orleans. And there's also a tremendous disparity between New Orleans and the rest of the country. Some of the highest rates of, again, diabetes and obesity anywhere. What's especially significant about New Orleans is the degree to which this is very localized. This is a really, galling map, and I encourage you all to go look this up for your own communities. This actually was put out by the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation also did an update of this. This is numbers from 2012. Robert Wood Johnson, I think, updated it in 2013 or 2014. But it's essentially a life expectancy map by zip code, with this idea that life expectancy really is the ultimate health indicator. It's really the ultimate indicator for, I think, a lot of metrics. And in New Orleans, there not only was some of the highest disparities in the country, but there was geographically some of the highest disparities between adjacent zip codes. And so I don't have a laser pointer, but where, as you can see, there's this area in the center of the city where life expectancies are only 55 to 56 years, which is unbelievable if you think about, again, sort of echoing on what Meredith was saying. We live in America, the fact that people in some zip codes are only living on average 55 years is just breathtaking. What's even more breathtaking to us is that the transition, as you move into areas that are much more in line with the national average in the mid-70s in terms of years of life expectancy, that threshold is essentially Broad Street. And so for us, as we were looking at where there were opportunities to really make a difference in these communities, this is the sort of definition of place-based development, sort of looking at the gaps and deficiencies and then really thinking about how do you turn those challenges into opportunities for addressing those needs. So this, in a sense, undergirds so much of what we do. As Meredith was saying, this is a map from 2008 that actually shows grocery stores that were shuttered and where they had opened in the aftermath of Katrina. As Meredith said, there are 18,000 residents, or were 18,000 residents per grocery store in New Orleans, which was about 2.5 times the national average. And in addition, the geography of where food access was in the city was highly correlated to race and class. It was definitely impacted by topography as well. So where there was flooding, obviously there was some impact in terms of the groceries, but it actually didn't predict where necessarily groceries would reopen as much as whether or not a community was affluent and whether it was primarily minority. And so, for example, you see where the green dots are, those are where grocery stores had reopened after Katrina. You have some outlying areas further north that are, areas that were heavily flooded, some of the lowest lying areas in the city, Lakeview and Gentilly, but those are primarily middle class white and African American neighborhoods, and they got groceries back as opposed to in the middle of the city where we also saw life expectancy so low in later studies, basically nothing reopened. And so Broad Street, if you drew sort of a, if you're doing like a correlation line, Broad Street sort of connects all of those unopened grocery stores. So we really felt like this was a really obvious need that needed to be met and a gap that we could sort of fill in the landscape in the city. And so this is what the Refresh Project site looked like before. There's my soccer mom Honda CR-V in that picture. This is 2009, and that is, it's a former Schwegman's grocery, which is a regional chain, not Wegman's, but it's Schwegman's. And it was one of probably 35 or 40 groceries in that particular chain. And they had probably 15 or 20 groceries in the city. And this one did not reopen post-Katrina. And this is what the project looks like today, more or less. Quite a transformation, I guess. And really, the whole vision behind the Refresh Project is around creating a community health hub. And so what we were really trying to do is identify all of the gaps that existed in from a community member's perspective, identify all of the gaps in really what would go into creating total community health. And so that obviously was food access. That was such a key component. But as Kim from Market Umbrella, who works at the Tulane Community Health Center, was saying today to a group of us, access without education is meaningless. And so you can't just put a grocery store in a community that hasn't enjoyed food access, that has so many other barriers to health and vibrancy, and expect any sort of health outcomes to change. And that really was our ultimate goal, was how do we see health return to these communities, and how do we see vibrancy return to these communities? And so we were really trying to address all of the social and environmental determinants of health. It's a pretty sort of bold undertaking, but it was something where we wanted to see not just food access, but all these ancillary and related services come back to these communities. And so what we did was we sort of came up with this idea of a community health hub where we linked high quality fresh food access with a range of other partners. And so we have 8 different organizations under roof. You have Whole Foods, you have the Tulane Goldring Center for Culinary Medicine, Liberty's Kitchen, us, Broad Community Connections, First Line Schools, which is a charter management organization. For better or for worse, New Orleans is an all charter public school system post-Katrina. First Line Schools is a very forward-thinking organization that runs 5 different school sites, and they incorporate the Edible Schoolyard programming, which Alice Waters pioneered in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and then we sort of imported and tweaked here in New Orleans on their sites, basically using food not only as an educational tool, but as really an empowerment and community building tool. So it's very deeply integrated into all of their curriculum. Boys Town, which is actually a national nonprofit, they have their New Orleans offices and some of their service space, on site. Boys Town, they have 11 different sites around the country. They're based out of Omaha, and they're really, their mission is primarily around working with families and strengthening families, particularly for young people who are going through the foster setting. And then Sprout New Orleans, which is our unbelievable partner. Emily's actually the horticulturalist, so she should be probably doing half of this presentation. But they run the teaching farm on site, which is also really deeply integrated into all of the programming on site. It's not just meant to be a production farm. It's really a teaching space and a programming space. I wanted to spend a little bit more time on the Goldring Center and Liberty's Kitchen just briefly. The Goldring Center for Culinary Medicine, as those of you who are on site today saw, or hopefully saw, it's actually, this image is us standing in the lobby. To the right is the Whole Foods entrance. Straight ahead is the Goldring Center. And it's a first-of-its-kind teaching kitchen in the entire country where Tulane School of Medicine and a doctor and a chef who are employees of the medical school basically created a teaching kitchen that is for 3 distinct populations. It's for medical students who, right now, it's an elective, but Tulane's eventually going to require all of their medical students to take culinary and nutrition classes as a part of their rotations, which is a really simple but very powerful idea, with the idea that doctors who actually know how to cook and who can interpret medical research, not just say eat less sodium, eat less sugar, but actually talk about recipes and how they cook and how they, you know, cook their red beans with less sodium or what have you. On the same side of that coin, they work with practicing physicians. So like yourselves, there's a lot of MDs that come to town for conventions, a large medical community in New Orleans to begin with. And for CMEs, for medical education credits, they actually teach classes that are fairly rigorous. That Dr. Harlan, who's behind the teaching kitchen, he always says it's not continuing medical vacation, it's continuing medical education. So they actually try and do fairly rigorous curricula. And then on the flip side of the coin is that they teach free community cooking classes in perpetuity. It's an endowed program. And that was critically important to us because of all of the linkages between partners, what we needed and had to have on site was really to have the connection between education and food access. And that's also a space that Sprout New Orleans occupies. And I'll let Emily elaborate on that. But if nothing else happened on site, we knew that we didn't just want to have a grocery store. We had to have the education, nutrition and education piece. To your left, when you go in the lobby, this is a panorama, so it's kind of hard to tell to orient yourself. But Liberty's Kitchen is to your left when you walk in the building. And Liberty's Kitchen is, you probably have something similar in a community near you. But Liberty's Kitchen works with opportunity youth, which is a term that the White House coined. It's essentially trying to describe 16 to 24-year-olds who are out of work and out of school, perfectly bright, capable young people, not unlike ones that I'm sure the doctor's working with. And I think that, you know, their programming is really not about teaching kids how to work in a cafe or hospitality setting. It's really about teaching life and employability skills. And so it's kids that you know, come to them frequently housing insecure. So about 60% of the kids that come to their program don't know where they're sleeping that night. It could be a grandmother's house or a friend's house. Don't have IDs, social security cards. They don't have bank accounts. They're unbanked. And so it's really about giving the space and the mentorship to really allow these young people to get their feet underneath them And it just turns out that a culinary setting is a built-in revenue stream for sustainability for the nonprofit, but it's also an amazing setting for education, both front of house and back of house. And so they operate about a 10,000 square foot space, the front of which is a cafe, a retail cafe. We got to eat lunch in there today, great food. And then behind that is a 6,000 square foot commissary kitchen that allows them to really capitalize on what is really becoming their bread and butter sort of operation that allows them to work with a lot more young people, which is doing school food meals and contract cooking. And so they cook fresh from scratch meals every day for about 4,000 school kids in the city. And so it's really, 4,000 meals, it's about 1,500 school kids every day. And so they're a really remarkable organization, and it really fed into this whole idea that in a community health hub, you can't just have, you can't ignore the fact that there's, you know, youth and workforce development needs in this community, and you can't even begin to talk about some of these other issues around food access if somebody, you know, is housing insecure or doesn't have a job on a daily basis. That's essentially the Refresh Project in a nutshell. Probably not a nutshell, that was kind of long-winded, but this idea of collective impact, getting everybody under the same roof, working together, and being really deliberate about all of those linkages that we all know go into how do you actually make communities healthier. And so that was sort of this idea behind the Community Health Hub. Sort of how we thought about this partnership. And it really goes beyond the partners who are on site. We have about 35 other partner organizations, give or take, ranging from the Backyard Gardeners Network and Jenga down in the Ninth Ward, up through Louisiana Public Health Institute, Tulane Prevention Research Center, you know, Second Harvest Food Bank, you know, large institutional partners, really with this idea of creating programming that, you know, starts to move the needle on health outcomes, really connecting access to outcomes. The theory of change, I am just learning all of this public health stuff as we go, but really this idea that when you combine food access, culinary and nutrition education, youth and workforce development, and wraparound services, you know, SNAP and WIC registration, healthcare access and the like, it'll lead to, you know, some short-term gains around knowledge and attitudes and behaviors, and then eventual long-term changes where we can really see changes in BMI, changes in employment in the community, changes in HbA1c levels, which is a measure of, you know, blood sugar in diabetics, or I guess in everybody, but particularly for diabetic communities. So really just thinking through how do we be really deliberate moving along this chain. Going back to the point about the Refresh Coalition, which was what we call that group of 35 individuals, it's really around this idea, which I guess funders really like today. I don't know if it means anything outside of certain circles, but this idea of collective impact, that it's not just about every organization doing what they do in a silo, but that together, sort of identifying all of these challenges and gaps in the community, that together, sort of filling all those different gaps will be more powerful than if everybody was just working on them in piecemeal. That's really all that is meant to signify. This is a shot of our community opening, which is actually on the rooftop. The building is a really funny building. I always call it the Jetsons era building. It's like a mid-century modern 1960s building. Has a lot of parking on the rooftop, but that also doubles as really great community event space. And so you can see downtown skyline there, just how close we are to in the inner city. And this was a really wonderful community grand opening event last October. And that's just a brief shot. I'm sure Emily has some beautiful pictures of plants actually in the farm, but that's just a small shot of the Refresh Community Farm. I won't go too much into this, but we, as I was saying, we take an evidence-based approach to everything. We really want to show, even if it is with qualitative data, we want to try and track process outcomes and data outcomes for everything. It's critically important to us to continue this work and actually show not only what's effective, but what isn't effective. You know, really kind of try and test out ideas in a really deliberate manner. We were actually fortunate, I should mention, to have a partner in the Tulane Prevention Research Center, actually did a baseline study with a control neighborhood. So there's a neighborhood called the Bunny Friend neighborhood, which is down in the upper Ninth Ward, that had very similar demographics to the neighborhoods around the Refresh Project. They are not getting a grocery store for the foreseeable future. And so the PRC actually went and did a 900 household study. statistically significant to actually get a baseline before the refresh project opened to be able to see sort of writ large. It's not getting into, you know, biometric data, but it is definitely survey data to look at what's the impact of having a grocery store and this kind of programming going into a community. So that's exciting to us. We really hope that we can, you know, keep going with that. And then lastly, for us, it was really critically important, and this is relevant to conversations around food access. It was really important to us that we had a seat at the table in the development and sort of long-term ownership of the project, because it meant that all of the partners would have a seat at the table. This wasn't just a market rate project where a private developer was, doing something that met a community need but also made them money. Which is not a bad thing, but we really wanted to preserve that long-term community seat, not just at the table, but really to have community be the table where this was always responsive to needs out in the community. And so this is just sort of how we thought about linking the financing and development of a project, which this was not a small undertaking, to the long-term programming, which I think is relevant for many of your communities, perhaps, where there's a lot of talk around healthy food finance. It's really difficult to keep the teeth in that sort of, it's really a long-term loan. And so without partners who are at the table, who are constantly holding people's feet to the fire, it's really tough to see those long-term outcomes actually happen. And so this is just sort of how we think about our development model.